With China inching closer and closer to replacing the United States as the world's largest economy, it's worth remembering that America wasn't always an economic superpower. In his latest book, Charles R. Morris tells the story of how the United States surpassed Great Britain in the 1890s to become the world's biggest economy. But it was thanks to the stunning economic development of the first half of the 19th century. The Dawn of Innovation, the First American Industrial Revolution, is published by Public Affairs, and I'm very pleased that it brings Charles Morris to our show today. Hello.
Thank you.
Several years ago, you wrote a book called The Tycoons about the moment when the United States surpassed Great Britain as the world's biggest economic power. Did this book grow out of your research on that?
Yes. When I began that book, I was thinking there was this totally rural nation that somehow in the course of 30 years passed Great Britain. Then I looked and looked.
We're mostly an agricultural society.
Yeah, and in fact, I had missed the pervasive industrial stuff that had been going on, and there was a real platform that the tycoons could build on.
So tycoons like Andrew Carnegie, J.P.
Right.
Morgan, John Rockefeller were building off the technological breakthroughs and the developments of infrastructure that had occurred during the first half of the 19th century?
During the 1820s, 1830s,
they couldn't have done what they did.
They could not have done what they had done, yeah.
So, but you say it was really the War of 1812 that jump-started
the War of 1812 was a big jump start. Now, I think we would have it would have happened anyway, I think, because these were the most energetic people in the entire world, the ones who left Great Britain, which was the most energetic industrious country in the entire world.
So people were leaving
and
Britain to come here to have an opportunity.
These were the people who were not satisfied with life in Great Britain. It was too stifled, and so these were the best of the best.
So we were getting a brain drain benefit,
yes,
actually.
Exactly
here.
Right.
But also a war benefit. Don't wars, not
yes,
just the War of 1812, but World War II, a Civil War as well, don't they all lead to post-war booms?
Well, there was this huge industrial boom during the War of 1812. There was a shipbuilding arms race on Lake Ontario.
Because it really was a war about Canada for a long time.
Yeah, but this arms race spurred an enormous amount of iron and coal and stuff all around upper New York State and through New England. And it let the Boston guys, it gave them a break from the imports of British cloth, so they could. That's when we began to make our own cloth.
Well, we were both fighting for control of the lake because that would determine whether the young United States would actually take parts of Canada as well.
Right.
But wasn't the British Navy the world's largest at the time, the greatest?
We fought them to a standstill.
Was that a big surprise to the rest of the world?
Yes, it was a big surprise. Yes. And it was also true, by 1814, our troops could actually fight toe-to-toe with the British.
And we won our biggest battle after the war was over, but that's a whole other thing.
Yes.
Great Britain was the enemy during both the Revolution and the War of 1812. Did the economic competition between the countries after the War of 1812 reflect that past?
Well, we were quite conscious that we were measuring ourselves against Great Britain through the entire 19th century. We kept very quiet about it. We didn't want to talk about it. But even Alexander Hamilton thought, you know, maybe, and he was a great admirer of England, but even he thought, you know, maybe in 40 or 50 years, he wrote, we might be their equal.
Is that what emboldened Monroe to issue the Monroe Doctrine?
Probably yes. I mean, we were very...
Because that was rather audacious
at
the time.
We sort of viewed Great Britain the way China now views us, mm-hmm. as a semi-hostile power on pushing very close to their shores, and who, which didn't have their best interest at heart.
And then comes the Erie Canal. That's a major development in the infrastructure. That's 1825.
Now,
was that in response to this economic boom and everything that was pushing us toward?
It was part of a mindset that you can't put one thing prior to the other. But if you look back at the 1820s, 1830s, and the 1840s, you had this pattern of linking larger and larger areas, so you could drive to mass production over a greater and greater boundary. In the Northeast, it came through canals first. In the Middle West, it came through the steamboat, and then finally railroads tied together first the internal Northeast, internal Midwest, and then crossed the mountains.
Well, once we connect the Midwest economically with the Eastern Seaboard, and we're creating one large economic unit.
It was a common market, and one of the biggest in the world at that time.
How does it compare with Britain? Britain is really two small islands, but it does have an empire.
Well, Great Britain it was a larger country than ours in terms of people and certainly in terms of national product. But we were out manufacturing Great Britain by the 1820s. The best data that we have suggests that our labor was about 25% more productive than British labor, in part because we kept our kids were much more educated.
We're also building newer factories.
Yes, and by the 1850s, we were as high as 75% more productive than the Great Britain, just in manufacturing, in part because we usually worked to a larger scale.
Well, we also were developing railroads, but so were the British.
Yes, so were the British. The thing is, the British, they tended to protect their old-fashioned craft industries. I think that was in part because of the viciousness of the Luddite reaction to the first textile mills.
Now, the early American leaders were all from the South, and a listener wonders, were the Southern states involved in the first Industrial Revolution in the U.S., or did they oppose it because it was mostly taking place in the North?
Well, the Southern states actually funded it. The major export that we had was cotton. Almost all the cotton profits flowed first to the Northeast for insurance, brokerage, and shipping, and anything to the South kept, they then paid to the Middle West for food and engines. So in a way I put it, the South exploited the slaves, and the rest of the country exploited the South.
And that's why, for a long time, people in the North supported slavery, even if they didn't want it in their own places.
The Lords of the Lash and the Lords of the Loom were really partners in slavery.
The Dawn of Innovation is Charles R. Morris's latest book, subtitled The First American Industrial Revolution. And throughout the book, it's the inventions and innovations that seem to make the biggest difference. Why was the invention of the steamboat such an important breakthrough for the country's economic development? The first one sails in 1811, right before the War of 1812.
Once people went crossed the mountains and settled in the Middle West. The only transportation was by river, and Western rivers you couldn't sail on them. They were shallow, they were rapid, and you had to invent an entirely new kind of steamboat that was very light. It was flat. It had a very lightweight engine with a very high power ratio. That was actually one of the major inventions that powered this entire era.
Although it didn't lead to transoceanic transportation, they pretty much stayed to our rivers.
This was a separate thing entirely. Yeah. The kind of boats that did the there were steamships that we made in New York and Philadelphia, but they were quite a different kind of ship with a deep hull and so forth.
You say there were also major improvements in measurement, which allowed for great precision. That was a new development?
Yes, there was no such thing as a marked rule in the 1850s. When you look at, say, gun specifications, they're full of words like roughly, make it about a foot and a half long, and in very rough kinds of things. So they simply take some kind of a model and try to match it. That's why they couldn't make interchangeable parts.
The British invented mass production in their textile industry. Why were they surprised when Americans started applying the same ideas across all of our industries?
Yeah, I have no answer to that. In fact, they built the first fully automated factory in the entire world in 1803. And they did it to make ship pulley blocks, a major wooden part of a warship, and never did anything else with it. I think it had to do with first of all, the British society was getting very rigid at that point. The grip of the crafts were very tight at that point, and it just didn't seem worth it.
You also write about the clockmakers in Connecticut who revolutionized their field, and also Dr. Sam Colt, who invented the Colt pistol, which was the first revolver.
Yes, well, and the people have been trying to make that for over a century and a half. Colt is an utter oxymoron, I think. He was a drinker, a roustabout, a party boy. At the same time, at nights, he was building. He was working out these very difficult, detailed things.
He was also a showman,
and
that helped him sell his item.
He used to give laughing gas exhibitions.
Michael in Brooklyn Heights, one of our listeners, asks, how important were tariffs? They protected northern industry, but the South was willing to trade its cotton for cheaper British goods.
Tariffs weren't particularly important in this era. Francis Lowell got a textile tariff passed that protected our base sort of rough cloth from Indian competition that had been mediated through Great Britain.
Now, what about the Civil War? In this case, it really divided ended this cooperation between North and South. Was there a similar boom after the Civil War?
Well, yeah. First of all, the best thing that the war did is that once the South was out of the Union, we could pass the Homestead Act, the Land Grant College Act, and the Union Pacific Act. This was in 1862, in the darkest part of the war, and those three played a major part in the boom that happened. And then, of course, because of all the building and the industry for the Civil War, we had a second boost in the 1870s.
There's been much debate recently about whether we should invest in infrastructure. What would the history of the 19th century suggest about how we should proceed? Are we past the point where we need to do this sort of thing?
Oh, no. We need to have a radical jump up in everything. Even now, we have one of the slowest internets in the entire world right now, even though that came from here. Roads.
So this sounds like the same sort of thing Britain was going through.
Absolutely.
Where they innovated and then wound
exactly
up just being satisfied
right.
with what they had.
In that same place now.
So does that mean we have to start importing people from China in hopes of goosing up the economy?
Well, we have to educate our own, I think, first, and then.
Do you think that the American economy could have continued to grow if the Civil War hadn't broken the hold that slavery had on the economy?
It would have taken a much longer time, I think. Yeah, and that's what Lincoln was really concerned about. The South were building lots of iron foundries, for instance, staffed by slaves. And Lincoln thought that they would wreck the whole point of free labor.
Ironically, for a while, the South benefited from the fact that the North had unionized industries, and they all moved to the South. Of course, most of those industries have now moved overseas. But for a while, the South was a major industrial center
right, yeah.
for the United States.
And they were a lagger for a long time, and even still are to some degree now.
My guest has been Charles R. Morris, who's the author of 12 books, including The Cost of Good Intentions, which was a New York Times bestseller in 1980, The Coming Global Boom, The Tycoons, The Trillion-Dollar Meltdown. His latest is The Dawn of Innovation, The First American Industrial Revolution. It is published by Public Affairs. And I want to thank you so much for being on our show today.
Thank you for having me.